Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, back to Steiny and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
All right, here's my guru. You had to see it on the YouTube chat. Hey.
It just doesn't hit the same.
All right, Evan Giddings in for Daryl the Guru Johnson. And hey, don't forget, the Warrior Summit is coming up a week from tonight, Thursday, November 6th, live from Jack's Restaurant and Bar in Pleasant Hill. All the hosts going to be there discussing the Warriors. We're going to do it a little differently this time. It's going to be 9 games into the season. It's going to give everybody a chance to settle in and see what we're looking at before the summit. Here's the way it goes. Willard and Dibs from 2 to 4. Then all the hosts join them from 4 to 6 live. Again, Jack's Restaurant and Bar in Pleasant Hill. We'll have great prizes. We'll have drink specials. Your chance to meet all the hosts on the same day. Jack's Restaurant and Bar in Pleasant Hill, Thursday, November 6th. We'll see you there. That's 2 to 4, Willard and Dibs. 4 to 6, everybody else. Love to see you out at Jack's Restaurant on Thursday. We've had the Tony Vitello press conference. He's the new manager of the San Francisco Giants, coached 8 years at Tennessee. And then after him, we had Tony Baselio, Knoxville radio host, who knows the Tennessee program very well and knows Vitello pretty well. And we're just starting to get to know this guy who has no major league experience, but he sounds like he's got the qualities that they think can translate.
It sounds like he's, and look, I told you before, what I was trying to figure out going into this is, like, what is it about this guy? You know, Tony said it too about his friend Tony. He's got, if there's anybody that could do this, if there's one person that could bridge the gap between college and the pro ranks with no experience, it was going to be Tony Vitello. So that, to me, going in, I immediately have my ears, my, you know, the radar up for, what is it about this guy? And after listening to him for a little bit and hearing Tony talk about Tony, I kind of get it. Like, I'm skeptical of it all working. I think that there's a reason why this hasn't been done before. I think there's a reason why it's unprecedented. But listening to him talk and then having it confirmed by someone who knows him personally, I can kind of get it. Like, I think it's hard not to be on board if you really listen to that guy, and if you're familiar with college baseball at all and you've watched Tennessee,
right.
Like, it's hard not to be a fan of the guy. When he's out there managing, it's like he's playing. But my skepticism is about, is that going to translate? But the guy himself, to me, I think there's few questions about him.
So you're telling me he's pretty animated?
Yes. And
okay, so
again, the thing that I took away from our last interview was he's world class when it comes to profanity.
And that actually got me to thinking about who I would put on my Mount Profanity More. among pro athletes, and I'm going to give him an honorary spot along with PJ Carlesimo.
Got to take his word for it.
And
PJ was a sailor.
Yeah, and I got Tommy Lasorda in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking to fill out the Mount Rushmore.
Bobby Cox.
Oh, he was.
I think he's all time in ejections. He's the leader.
Oh, but so you're just assuming he used profanity?
No, you could see it when you watched him manage.
You know, the one thing I was thinking, and if you want to jump in here and talk about the Giants' new managerial hire, the number's 888-957-9570. You know, there have been other guys who have tried this. You know, Rick Pitino, PJ Carlesimo, Mike Montgomery. The one guy who you brought up that I do find interesting as someone who I think clearly has navigated college to pros extremely well, and we don't have any baseball examples, but when you brought up Brad Stevens, all right, Brad Stevens, and I agree with you, has figured out a way to navigate that jump. And I think about Brad Stevens, and the one thing about Brad Stevens that always sticks out to me is I just think he's very understated. So, which I think you have to be in that position. I think the balance is you can't be meek and feel like you need to defer because you've never done it before, but you also can't go in there thinking you know it all. And I'm going to tell these guys how we're going to remake this team and how, you know what I mean? Like you got to, you've, if he's credible over time, it will translate. But I do think there's a fine line to walk. You can't get walked over and you can't walk on these guys who have been in the major leagues for years and years. And like, that's the one thing I just feel like from the outside when I was watching Brad Stevens. You know, what did he do to earn the respect of the players and the front office that has led him to where he is now? I don't know. I just feel like whatever he did would have been a great template for Vitello.
Well, one difference I think is that, to my knowledge, Brad Stevens wasn't brought in to coach an older team. Like the Celtics, when they got Stevens, yeah, they, you know, the Isaiah Thomases and some of the veterans, but like very quickly they became a young group. He was there to help develop and usher in a Tatum, a Brown, a lot of like the baby Celtics in 2017-18 when he was beginning to take over there. Like he was allowed to coach a young group. Vitello is brought in, and let's be honest, a lot of these guys they're veterans. And our own Mark Willard, who we're going to talk to in a little bit here, I thought had, you know, the question I was looking to hear, right? Well, how do you build a relationship or how do you gain the trust of guys with kids? You know, how do you do it with guys that have been in the league for 10 years? And I think we've learned that like the Chapmans, the Adamases, the Devers, to some extent, they're going to give you the benefit of the doubt just because they're pros. But still, you got to earn it. The one thing that I felt like listening to him, and I brought his name up before, he ain't Gabe Kapler. Now, it might not work.
Right.
Like, this team might not be good. The teams that he manages might be bad. It might just be a bad fit. Maybe college coaches don't belong in the pros. I don't know. He ain't Gabe Kapler. Gabe Kapler was fake. And we found that over the course of a long time. But Gabe Kapler was a fake person who he was to the media, what it sounds like he was to some players, and to who he really is. I think that Tony Vitello, the guy we saw today at the podium, is the guy that the players are going to see. The guy that Buster Posey and Zach Manassian clearly fell in love with, who, by the way, sounds like it was Manassian's guy.
Right.
Not necessarily Posey's.
No doubt. That was a funny line, actually.
And that's the guy that we're going to see for 162 from here on out.
Yeah. Did I miss a breaking news sound?
What do you mean?
You say we're going to get Willard on?
Oh, he's the crossover, right?
Oh, I thought he was going to make a special early appearance on the show.
He's probably still asking questions. You know,
it did sound like that, though. I agree.
Yeah, and he's more than willing. If he wants to jump on for 5 or 10 minutes immediately, we can have Mark on. He's in the belly of the beast over there, dominating. Question three. Asker number two, because Shea had a follow up.
Well, it's a little tough sometimes, especially when. I don't know, you've been in those kind of press conferences. You want to make a good first impression, but you don't know if someone's going to ask your question before you get to ask it.
Yeah.
So you kind of got to ask it in a different way. You know, you hit him with the old, well, in the same vein, you know.
Sure.
To follow up on it, just to dig a little deeper. So you preface him by sounding more professional than you.
I hated to ask questions at a press conference. I just didn't. I don't know. I just
as long as there's a microphone and you know when you're going, like, to me, that's the one thing I hate about Niners pressers. They're like a pack of hyenas, man. Like, as soon as Shanahan walks to that podium, people just pounce. And it's like, can I get a word in first? I still don't know what I'm going
to
say.
Most teams have a dude with a microphone who walks around and gives it to them. One by one. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, an Odyssey sports station, always live on the free Odyssey app, now broadcasting from the Laughing Monk Studios. Evan Giddings is in for Daryl the Guru Johnson. You know, Guru's gone through some stuff. He'll be back tomorrow. But Tony Vitello was introduced. You know, the other thing, as the next manager of the Giants, the one word that Posey used that I thought was interesting was concise.
Conciseness. Is that a word?
That's what I thought.
That's what he said.
But I think it might be a word. But I know what he means. That means he's a man who doesn't use extra words when he doesn't need to. By the way, Billy Martin, they're saying definitely on Mount Profanity more.
Earl Weaver.
Yes.
Thrown out there. He's got a couple of great clips. You know who I've heard is quite profane, but I guess doesn't really get a ton of, you know, notice for it? Robert Saleh.
Really?
Yeah, I've heard it can be.
It's not profane when you say I'm going to end you.
Oh, yeah, we saw him at the end of that Jacksonville Jaguars game get pretty profane. Yeah, but I've heard he's a great motivator, should we see it.
Yeah. I don't know. Like
Kyle Shanahan, I'm not sure. Well, he probably curses all football games.
Yeah, I think he does.
Possibly.
Like, my college coach never swore, ever. Ever.
Didn't really?
Swear, never had a drink, never smoked anything in his life. Maybe.
Well, if I didn't know he was a legend, I would say, how the hell was he a good coach? But
He was a great coach, but you can see how, you know, might have butted heads with him a little bit. You know?
What? You didn't swear and drink in college.
It's college, Evan. But I'm definitely open-minded. He does seem like if anybody can handle it, he sounds like the type of guy that's going in with his eyes wide open and he knows what he's got to do. And the one thing, here's where I would say about Posey is, like, Posey's the kind of guy that, because he played, I think he understands the importance of when a front office has supports a manager or players on a team. Like, the one thing I do believe about Buster Posey, just from watching him play and who he is, he knows that he's going to have to, you know, give this guy all the support he needs, and he's going to have Posey in his corner for a while. And that's a big voice to have behind you. And I don't know if he felt that strongly about Melvin, for example, but he has to feel strongly about this guy because it's his guy.
I think that also gets buy-in from the players. Like, if Posey's in your corner, you have to give Posey that respect that this person that he chose is the one. Now, I think the other part, too, that I think it was Tony Bosello that said this, which is important. Vitello told Tony Bosello that he wanted to fill the place at Tennessee when it was not a place that was very full. That's important because one thing that was always a topic of conversation around Farhan Zaidi and his time here was, well, the ballpark's not really that full. It's kind of empty. And a lot of that had to do with the players that were on the field and the brand of baseball that they played. But if Vitello could fill a place in Knoxville, and it's a lot smaller of a ballpark, but it wasn't a place that was known for being full, to me, that also is something that I'm going to pay attention to. Like, can this guy literally impact attendance? Like, if he's that energetic and his teams sort of embody the kind of style that he apparently has, authentic, humble, fiery, passionate, then that's going to be a team that I want to go out and watch. Like, in a way, Steiny, I think that the first few homestands of this season, I'm going to want to go to kind of because I want to see if there's an immediate impact from their manager on this group.
So, Risotto, who's filling in today, is telling me, and you guys would know more, he's saying Tennessee's baseball program was kind of hated.
Well, it wasn't football. Definitely wasn't basketball.
What do you mean?
They hated. So opponents, opposing coaches, opposing players, media, they hated everything that that Tennessee team was about. Everything from their persona, their energy, the way they quote-unquote respected the game. They were not... They kind of changed things in terms of, I guess, their persona and how they went about their business.
So would it be fair to say they think of themselves kind of like the Miami Heat think of themselves with Heat culture?
Think of the term act like you've been there before and then think of the opposite. Then you have Vitello's Tennessee baseball program as it's been described.
You mean just...
Just think of Drew Gilbert.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, that guy. Sure. Yeah, the guy that you didn't feel like was having much of an impact. The nutcracker in the dugout biting Robbie Ray's jersey and getting choked out by Matt Chapman. That guy. That's Tennessee baseball.
There are a couple things that I do wonder about. And it's like, let's take some of the Giants veterans. Devers, Adamas, Chapman, Webb. I don't understand when we're talking about guys like that. Devers, if he's healthy, he's going to play 155 games. Like, all those guys are going to play. So how bad could Vitello be that, like, a guy like the veterans don't come around to him? No, and they're just going to play every day. Like, I don't think there's going to be I don't know why. The only guy... Let me just throw this at you. Okay, you got a college coach coming in here, might be a rah-rah guy. Is there a player that you would think, who's the player you'd be most afraid would say, this guy's a fraud? Because I have a guy. There's only one guy I'm thinking of, and that would be Chapman.
I actually disagree with that.
Do you?
Yeah, because there was a bunch of nut jobs that he played with when he was in Oakland. Like, that was a pack of misfits. He was a younger kid. He was a younger player.
But as a manager, though?
No. Well, the managers are different. I also think Bob Melvin is a little more of a player's manager than people give him credit for. He's just very stoic in public. But to me, Chapman is actually a guy that I think there will be buy-in from. Because, you just look as Chapman's the one that's choking out Gilbert. Like, I think that kind of energy is infectious. And it's something that I think those guys are going to buy into. I think... I got to be honest, if there's a player that's wondering what's going on here, it's Rafael Devers.
You think?
Yeah, I do. Because Devers does it his way. And that's led him to $300 million and a World Series ring and a few Silver Slugger awards. But in Boston, he's always played for like baseball guys. And they've been old school, they've had experience. And he's the newest member of this team. I mean, he's here for the next umpteen years or whatever. He got traded and now is like, well, this is kind of strange. You know, I think not that Devers won't buy in, but if there was a guy I would be worried about, it'd be him.
Yeah, just like if the Warriors were to hire Vitello, a guy like Vitello, who's the guy you'd be worried about? Probably Draymond and Butler.
Yeah, I think so.
Here's the other thing that I always think about when these type of things happen. How much does this matter? Like, if this guy's really doing his job at Tennessee, he doesn't know anything about, you know, the personnel on all the National League teams. Like, what does he know about pitching to a certain lineup right now? And can you learn that quickly? You know, just these things that kind of old school managers just know through osmosis almost.
Well, there's a built-in understanding of, all right, how are we going to attack the Dodgers lineup, because Melvin's coached managed against them multiple times. But number one, we saw how that worked out. Number two, the one thing that was emphasized multiple times by Posey and by our guest was he's not going to be outworked. Like, this is a guy that is the hardest recruiter, and I say that lightly because everyone says that. But I don't think that like scouting reports and sort of advanced statistics, things that you need to know at the top of your head about an opposing team, I don't think that's as big of a concern for me. One of the concerns that I have just day to day is he talked about, I think it was, the difference between coaching 52 versus 162.
Right, right.
He emphasized sample size, but also mentioned, well, you have to look at each game individually. Yes, you do, but you also have to have a broader understanding of where we are in our our schedule, where we are in the week, what do we have available to us, and how badly we want to chase this game. That's something that he has no experience doing.
I would assume that managing a major league pitching staff with 162 games and then managing a pitching staff in college is not even comparable in the least.
No, I mean, that's right. Why the only guy that's made this sort of a similar jump is the manager of the Milwaukee Brewers. His name is Pat Murphy. He coached in college for a quarter century, and then I think he spent close to 10 years in the minors first. And that's a little bit shorter of a schedule, but that got him ready to be a big league manager, and their team's been very successful. So I think if there's a guy that you could point to and say, well, he's done it before, but it took him a couple of years to get used to that 6-month grind. And then some, again, you're in spring training, potentially in October. There's a long marathon type approach to this that Vitello does not know about. And he's going to be learning on the fly.
Yep. Tony Vitello was introduced today as the new manager of the San Francisco Giants. No managerial experience at the major league level. No playing experience at the major league level. So the way I always look at something like this is, well, this ought to be fun. Let's see. Something outside the box. And let's see if it works. Let's see if it works.
They definitely should be a more fun team to watch.
I would. Like,
you would hope.
See, I feel like I wish Guru were here now because he deserves to hear this because he was all over it. But if this guy is who he sounds like he is, and then compared to Melvin, I think Guru will be happy with the energy level increase.
Hey, Guru's going to love him.
I'm out.
I think he might.
He's not going to be out because Vitello will flip the proverbial spread. God love him.
Five ejections at Tennessee. So one about every other year.
He does seem like the kind of guy that when he gets ejected, he's going to get his money's worth.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. All right. What's coming up on the game is brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good. Don't forget, coming up at 1 o'clock, we got Steve Summers. He grew up in San Francisco. He's a Giants fan, Warriors fan, and he's worked at WFAN in New York since 1987 on the Overnight Show, and apparently he's a hoot. So I'm looking forward to that on 95.7 The Game, brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good.
Now, back to Steiny and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
All right, Evan Giddings in for Daryl the Guru Johnson. And I'll tell you what, Zach Manassian is building a bully over there at Oracle. This was his idea.
Geppetto.
He's the idea guy.
He's Geppetto. Pulling strings.
Suppose he's an empty suit.
I can't even believe you said that.
He does look good in the suit, though. So does Vitello.
Posey's. I'm a Posey fan. Although, here you go. I'll let you take this one before we switch subjects. 5-3-0. I hate to continue harping on this, but what would people be saying if Farhan was the guy that hired a college coach with no experience?
I completely agree. I think that's an absolutely fair point, but that's why you brought in Buster Posey. I think.
Yeah.
I'm starting to get a little Hanna-Barbera vibe from Manassian.
Oh, please explain.
Posey.
What does that mean?
There is no Barbera without Hannah. And there is no Hannah.
There was no Barbera?
No. Together, they created great cartoons.
Oh, like Abbott and Costello.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
That's the same thing. Individually, they didn't accomplish much. Manassian, I do find it interesting, is the holdover from the Zaidi regime. He's someone with a lot of experience. And it seems like a lot of these ideas that the Giants have been floating and that Posey is being given credit for have originated with him because he's the one who's been here before. But Posey's the one that gives those moves legitimacy and allows people to give them a chance. Like, I think he's the guy that earns the benefit of the doubt. And that's a big reason why, in addition to hearing Vitello and listening to all the things that I like, that's another reason why I got to give him a shot.
Yeah, and here's another reason to give him a shot from the 650 and the Boxer and Gerson Work Injury Attorneys text line. Guru had no radio experience, and he's doing just fine when he shows up.
Oh, come on.
Tony V will do a good job, too. That's from Mr. Irrelevant.
The guy's at a funeral today.
Yeah.
Get off him.
That's true, though. Goo fit in, and he came in like a house on fire.
Well, he would even tell you it took him some time. You know, that people had to get adjusted to the goo.
Okay, and if you want to go there, I'll go there because it's a very...
Including you.
It's a very good point. When Guru comes into the media environment and nobody knows who he is, what happens? In like two seconds, 2 hours, or 2 days, you get to see exactly who the guy is and you can't help but like him. Hey, you don't know if he's going to work, but... He's already got a head. Well, no, when he comes, you know, he won the lucky break. And you know how this business is. Oh, we're going to put him on the radio. I'm sure there are a lot of people in here that are like, who's this guy? Who's this guy? We don't even know if he can do it. So he comes in and starts doing it. And the first thing you fall in love with is the guy because he's such a good guy. And then you realize he's got a little something and he gets better and better at it.
I hope that
does not sound condescending or patronizing.
No, I don't think you're trying to be. It might just come off like you're not trying, though.
I'm being dead serious.
But like, if Guru
were a jerk, he never, ever would have made it in this business. How about that?
Well, he wouldn't have won the lucky break if he was a jerk because it's very clear the first time you listen to him, he's not a jerk. But I do think that if Guru had a Posey in his corner, then that initial skepticism of, well, what's he doing? And his style's different. It might be easier to give him that chance. Like, he earned it, and after a while, it's very clear. Goo's a guy that he's going to fit. But Vitello having someone in his corner immediately with the gravitas of Buster Posey, I think that's going to help him, especially with the players. Like, we could talk about all we like. Do we think it's going to work? Do we like him? Do we not? It really doesn't matter if the team doesn't buy in. And that's, at the end of the day, what's going to determine his legacy here.
Yeah. All right. We'll keep an eye on that, and we'll talk more about the Giants maybe when Mark Willard and Dan Dibley come in for the crossover. Willard was at the press conference asking questions, interested to get his perspective on what he saw out there. But we got a football game on Sunday. The 49ers play the New York Giants, and Evan, who's going to be the starter for the Giant for the 49ers on Sunday?
Who's going to be the starter?
Yeah, quarterback.
McCorkle.
He was day-to-day on
Michael McCorkle
on Monday.
Do you have the Shanahan sound? We actually we played this yesterday after you left to go see Billy Idol, and I'm glad you had a great time. But do you have the sound from Shanahan about what he needs to see from Brock Purdy to make him the starter?
Yes, I do, and here it is.
That he feels confident he's ready to go based off how his toe feels. I mean, he's going to look that way most likely getting out there. I mean, he gets out there and he's hobbling around and stuff. He won't be out there. So he's got to go out there and go through the practices and stuff and really let us know how good he feels because it's hard to know what's going on with the toe and they're really iffy things. And something, you know, last time we felt like he was feeling pretty good, looked pretty good in practice. And the game one hit and set him back 5 or 6 weeks, whatever this has been, 4 weeks. So it's kind of a sensitive situation and hopefully getting some reps in practice and stuff will give him that confidence that it's better than it was last time.
All right, so what I'm hearing there is the first thing Purdy's got to do is say he's ready to go. And then probably either today and tomorrow, he's going to have to participate fully and show that, you know, he can run and he can move and he can be quick and elusive and all those kind of things. They can only do so much in practice, but he's going to have to hit a threshold there, clearly, where, yes, he can feel good, but Shanahan's got to think that he's got all his capabilities with him before he puts him in that position.
Yeah, he's got to be a full participant.
Yeah.
That's a non-negotiable at this point. If he's a limited participant in practice, like, I know he's been on the practice field and he's been off to the side, but unless he's getting full reps with the ones, I don't see how they're going to let him step on the field in New York. And I don't think it has to do as much, like the turf is a factor because it's been a house of horrors for whoever's played on that field. But I just think Steiny, when I hear Shanahan talk about it, I don't think he knows what's going on and how the toe is going to react day to day.
Yeah.
Because Brock Purdy can't practice. And that's the thing is, it sounds like if you have turf toe, from everybody I've listened to talk about it, if you have turf toe and you practice, you don't know whether it's going to react well or not. I mean, hell, they had targeted week 8, according to Diana Rossini of The Athletic, and then the night of the Falcons game, or the day of the Falcons game, that Sunday that preceded week 8, he had a setback in a workout. That probably is what prevented him from playing and practicing, I should say, that week leading up to Houston, which means he wasn't going to play. So every time he goes out there to practice, not to play, I'm talking about practice, to practice, he has a chance to re-aggravate that toe. And that means that the Niners have no control and no idea when he's going to come back. And so until I hear a different tone from Shanahan that is has a hint of certainty to it,
right?
Mac Jones is the starting quarterback.
I tend to agree with you on that. And we were talking about this before the show, and it is kind of interesting. And we've talked about it a little. And then I heard Willard address it a little bit yesterday about it. Well, if we were, you know, we were somewhere else in another market, the Purdy questions would be coming rapid fire, and people would be just prying and prying. Media would be prying and prying for information. And there's a feeling that the media maybe isn't doing that, but let me tell you, like, as somebody who's been in the media, there's just, it's like, if you're a media guy, it's, you're right, it's clear that they don't know where they're at with Purdy. And if we don't know where we're at with Purdy, then it's status quo, no doubt about it. And after a while, you just kind of, you kind of accept it, and then you wait for, you know, you keep asking Shanahan, but you got to wait for him to say, no, he's ready, plain and simple, and he'll do that when it's time.
Well, that said, as also a former multi-decade member of the media, could you understand why some people would feel frustrated with those questions not being asked?
Yes. Yes, and I do, I'm a subscriber to, sometimes you have to ask a question, even if you know what the answer is going to be, or even if you know that it might not get answered to your liking, but you still have to, you still have to ask it. Yes, I just, and Shanahan would have to play the role like every coach would play, just kind of hemming and hawing. But I also think that never kind of gets you anywhere anyway, in terms of any new information. But Cam Inman was on with the afternoon guys yesterday, and he was asked about that, like where are the questions about Purdy?
First of all, everybody's fatigued. It's been a month, I mean, in terms of Brock not being on the field. You know, the fact that he was still limited going into today, if he was full practice, then you'd be like, all right, so then your radar changes, right? But it's been the same. However, the press conference ended with Kyle being asked about it. And he actually, those were his best quotes when he said, I know you guys want it black and white, but it's a sensitive issue that nobody knows except for Brock on how his toe's going to respond. It's a Wednesday. Tomorrow's a bigger practice. It's Thursday. If he has any chance of playing against New York, it's going to be how he feels on Friday. So essentially, I mean, you can ask all you want. He's not going to, first of all, if I'm the head coach, I'm not giving you the answer anyway. Because if I'm going to unleash him against the Giants, then I'm holding that close to the vest until kickoff on Sunday. I owe you no reason to tell you that. But the NFL always wants to know who the starting quarterbacks are. And I think the other side of it is everybody's kind of on the understanding that, okay, if it's Mac Jones, that's acceptable. They can win with Mac Jones because they won 4 of the 6 starts with Mac Jones. And there's other pressing issues like who the heck's going to rush the other team's quarterback. And now you brought in 2 new guys to do so. So tell us about that.
It's we're very respectful out here in the Bay Area. That's what it is.
You know what I heard?
Ooh.
He just said there's more pressing issues than the starting quarterback.
That's true. I would agree with that right now.
And I think that I brought it up to Willard yesterday, which I think is also something that a lot of the fans feel like. You talked about this, and I totally agree. there's not as much urgency for Purdy because you're 4-2 with Mac Jones. You're still winning games. I think if they were 2-4 or 1-5, I do think there would maybe not questions of like when Brock Purdy's coming back, but hey, is there any sort of rush to get your guy back because the season is not going the way you want it to go? You know, the whole game plan to me, the moment Brock Purdy went down, to some extent when Kittle went down, and certainly when Fred Warner and Nick Bosa got hurt, is can you just survive? Like, can you just survive until you start to get some semblance of health? And I know that we're in week 9, but they're still in survival mode. In fact,
right,
the theme of this season, Steiny, might just be survival. Like, thinking about all that they've had to go through, the amount of games they've lost, especially key positions to injury, the quarterback that they're going to pay but they don't have, the schedule that they're playing that kind of covers up a lot of the deficiencies, which we all have seen and can, you know, glaringly look at each Sunday. The theme of this season is becoming survival. Just survive the season and then figure out what you can do from there, because I really don't know what else to kind of pinpoint about this football team aside from they're just totally banged up.
Yeah, and the one thing it feels like, too, is there doesn't seem to be an internal feeling among the fans, and this is kind of what I want to get at, that the offense changes dramatically when Purdy's in there. And so I'm thinking to myself, man, so are the 49ers in this position, meaning no rush to get Purdy back, because Mac Jones is the best backup in football, and because he's the best backup in football, he's, you know, he plays to a certain level up to Purdy. And the reality of the situation is, I think there are a lot of 49er fans that don't think there's a big difference between the two. And I'm wondering, is that great because they got Mac Jones, or is that concern because maybe you signed a quarterback who's good, but isn't elite or isn't notches above a guy like Mac Jones?
Well, I think he's notches above Mac Jones.
Do you?
Yeah.
What about a notch?
A notch? Yeah. If like, I think Brock Purdy is a borderline top 10 quarterback.
All right.
Mac Jones is a bottom half of the league quarterback.
Yeah, I would say Purdy's like 10, but I would say Mac Jones could get to between 15 and 20, maybe.
Maybe. I mean, look, they're winning games. Right. I think enough, this is something you have to factor in as well. The schedule. If Mac Jones was, like, I know that they were a much better team in 2023. That team eviscerated a first-place schedule. Like, they ran through a lot of good teams, and they dominated really up until Christmas when, by the way, the best team in the regular season, Baltimore, came in and just took your lunch. But Brock Purdy was the quarterback of that team. If Mac Jones was playing a first-place or even second-place schedule, do you think we'd be in the same position? No. Now, he had a good win against L.A. I don't want to strip that from him because he was really good in that game. But you got to do that every week.
Right.
Like, you got to beat a team like the Rams every single week. And that, to me, is what separates backup quarterbacks from starting quarterbacks, where I think that Brock Purdy, while he's not, again, an elite guy, he's got a much better chance to do that.
Yeah.
He beat Seattle on the road. And we're learning that Seattle's a pretty damn good team.
Yeah. No doubt about it. The afternoon guys, Willard and Dibbs, yesterday had on Greg Cosell, NFL Films, and they asked him to assess Mac Jones' performance on Friday. Take a listen to what Greg Cosell said.
It was a hard game for Mac Jones because of the way it played out. You know, obviously, they had to throw probably more than they wanted to at a pretty early juncture in the game. So Jones really could not find any consistent rhythm in this game. I thought there were too often he looked like he was playing fast. There was one particular route, though, that worked a number of times, and that was the outcuts versus the Texans' predominant two-shell coverage concepts. There were four or five of those plays where he threw basically they were high-low concepts outside the numbers. That was an area where they worked pretty well. But it was just the kind of game, guys, where there was no way to get into a rhythm, because in the second half, you pretty much had to throw all the time. And that's not Mac Jones, and that's not the way they want to play. That's not the way they're built to play.
That was Greg Cosell on Mac Jones' performance. He seems to think that, and I kind of agree. I mean, if you don't have the ball, it puts so much more pressure on you on your offense. And then they go three and out a couple times. And now it just puts so much pressure on the offense. And the Texans are starting, you know, the Texans get to play with a lead. They get to play more aggressive. I didn't think Mac Jones was terrible. And maybe he wasn't great, but because the team was so bad offensively and defensively and in special teams, I think he probably avoided the scrutiny that he would have gotten if they would have played better and lost.
I agree.
Overall.
Well, you're starting to figure out that, like a lot of backup quarterbacks, Mac Jones is limited. Like, his impact of the game is dictated, and I know this is the argument against Purdy too, but his impact on the game is dictated by the script. Like, when he's been successful, it's been because the game has, and like he was really good against the Rams, but like those first two drives were scripted about as perfectly as you can. They went down the field, had two lengthy drives, got 6 points on each of them, and went up 14-0 and used that as a way to kind of sort of manage the rest of the game. And Mac Jones was good. And then they got some breaks towards the end. They made it happen in overtime and got a big stop defensively. But when the game has not gone according to the script, Mac Jones, he's powerless. Like, they needed to pick up a third down to get their defense some rest, right, and keep Houston off the field. And I agree that the Niners defense was not great in that football game. There's no excuse. But if your offense can just disrupt the flow of the game a little bit, then you have a better chance of maybe putting your defense in a better position to make a play. But your offense, they couldn't sustain a single drive, and they were just, like, I mean, they were three and outs. They were punting, it felt like, every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And Mac Jones, while I think he's a serviceable quarterback, he's not someone that can disrupt, I think, the flow of the game. If it's moving in their direction, he can manage it. He's going to be good at it, but he's not someone to me that's going to, like, in a game that's not going your way, just kind of make an impact.
Right. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game all season long, kicking off with a juicy Week 9 matchup, San Francisco 49ers versus the New York Giants. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. I am fascinated and always have been with these scripts, these opening drive scripts.
Oh, I know.
And here's my question. Okay, you have a script.
Is this Steiny's stat of the day?
No, I'm asking questions that I don't know the answer to.
Well, yeah, but maybe we can find your stat of the day within this question.
Okay. Well, first of all, yeah, not a good opening drive for the Niners.
Yeah.
But so you have a script, and there it is. Houston gets the ball and takes 12 minutes off the clock, and it's now 3-0, and you're late in the first quarter. Does that script still work at that point exactly like it would work if it's 0-0 or if you get the ball first? You know what I mean?
Well, Houston had the ball first.
Right.
Kind of dictated terms. Yeah, I mean, well, like, you don't get to, like, choose.
But are the...
Like, I think the Niners would be better served taking the ball first.
Yeah, that's... You don't like to do that.
I know. He likes to lap people.
He likes to double up.
He likes the lap.
He almost tripled up.
Could
have tripled up.
When was that?
They scored late.
Oh,
Lenore intercepts. They get a cheapy field goal, and then they get the ball.
By the way, if you're Houston, like, what are you doing? You got 25 seconds to try and get into field goal. Why are you making stupid decisions with the ball?
It's a Hail Mary.
You're up 9.
You know what?
Well, it wasn't a Hail Mary.
Let me tell you what the NFL needs to do. Because this is the way we do it now. We're so soft. You know, the NBA, if now you take a heave from 70 feet, and he missed. You don't get an attempt for that. And no, we won't give you an attempt for that. The shot's too long. Okay, that's fine.
Dude, Houston hit two of them yesterday.
When you are throwing a Hail Mary and it gets intercepted, it shouldn't be an interception. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's like an incomplete.
Well, it would have mattered if D'Amador Lenore had just gotten down. By the way, So I am in agreement that it's pandering to the players for sure. You should get the points as a team. It should not be a three-pointer towards your percentage. Like, if you're going to take away a field goal if it's a heave, right? It doesn't count as a miss. It can't count as a make. Like, your team gets the points, and it goes in some miscellaneous file under team shots.
Like team three-pointers?
Exactly. Because last night in, I think it was the Toronto game, Houston, Tari Eason hit two heaves. One at the end of the first quarter, he banked it from like midcourt, and then he hit a heave at the end of the third, and he drilled both of them. He should not have on his ledger, he's 2 for 3 from three in the game.
What's the distance? Do we know? Does it have to be beyond half court?
I think it's like the final seconds and beyond 35 or something.
You know what? What's going to happen is they're just going to start saying, you know, guy misses an 18-footer at the buzzer. Let's not give him an attempt for that.
36 feet.
36?
36.
That's a normal shot for Curry.
Well, 35 is. 36 is a little long.
Wait a minute.
He made that one against Denver from 34.
All he's got to do is get to 38 and take a shot, and it won't count?
Well, they're going to guard Curry. They're not going to guard Tari Eason.
But it has to be at the end of the quarter, right?
Yeah.
Like final Curry 3 seconds.
Curry can't just start firing up from 40 and not going against him.
He's also got to wait until under 3 seconds.
Okay. All right. All right. What is it here? 1242, 888-957, 957-0 is the number. Don't forget, coming up at 1 o'clock, I'm looking forward to Steve Summers, longtime WFAN host. He's been there since 1987. He's retiring. He's got a book out. He's from San Francisco. He's a Giants fan. He's a Warriors fan. And here's the bottom line. Here's why we're having him on. Because Matt Nahegan, the boss, said he's a great guest. And I told him, I'll be the judge of that.
We'll see.
That segment brought to you by Ceramani Ford.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast with Dan Hanzus and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.